I'll try to do better.
No, that's good.
You're listening to Please Be Reasonable, where we seek to speak humbly and passionately about things that matter and things that don't.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Please Be Reasonable. I'm your co-host, Sam.
And I'm your co-host, Josh.
Josh, it's good to be with you tonight.
It's good to be with you, Sam.
Recording at my house late at night.
That's right. Here we are.
Super tired. I might not make it through tonight. I'm not going to lie.
I think you can do it.
I got some caffeine in me. We're going to try it.
And here we go.
And okay. All right. We're going to start a podcast. All right. Here we go. And a go.
So what's going on, Sam?
Nothing much, man.
Yeah.
I got hit by a turkey today while I was driving.
Wow.
It was mildly startling.
What happened to the turkey?
Okay, that's actually the best part of the story. So I hit a turkey when I was driving out in a country highway in my work car, and I hit it going like 55 miles an hour, and it hit the side of the car and ripped off the mirror, and it was terrible. It's poor turkey, you know? And so I freak out and I pull over, and I'm picking up the pieces of the car that fell off and taking pictures for insurance. And then I hear the poor turkey, and he's going like, you know? And so I'm like, oh no, I gotta put this turkey out of his misery. So I like go across the little street, and I find him. And I'm thinking, like, is this cute little adorable turkey, you know? This is, like, full-on fatty Peanuts Thanksgiving special, like, gobbler, like, monster turkey sitting there just staring at me with his, like, cockamamie wobble wing just going, like, you did this to me. And so, in my mind, I'm like, well, I gotta, like, you know, like, kill him. Like, you know, break his neck or something because he's all beat up and bent and he's gonna die. And so I start to walk up to him. And he just, like stood up and, like, bared his, like, claw things on his feet and was just like, you shall not pass kind of moment. And then he flew away, and I didn't chase him. And that's the end of the story.
Does the Peanuts Thanksgiving special actually have a turkey in it?
I don't know. Honestly, all I know about the Peanuts Thanksgiving special is the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror that references it.
Oh, okay. So... Well, see, because Malachi, our 4-year-old, has been, like, obsessed with those Peanuts TV specials. And so he watches that one a lot. And, like, Charlie Brown makes, like, popcorn for his friend because he doesn't know how to make a turkey dinner.
That's amazing. Dude, speaking of kids, my daughter right now is in this great place where she's developmentally, she's just starting to memorize song lyrics, which is the most adorable thing on earth, but it's made me like insanely aware of what music we let her listen to because my daughter like loves like rap and dance music and like things with like really bassy beats and all the different things. And, she's recently started requesting Yeah by Usher by name. And she actually knows some of the lyrics of that song, which, gotta say, is not the proudest dad moment I've had in my life. And so now we'll have these moments where she's like, music? And I'm like, yeah, what do you want to listen to? And she goes, Usher? Yeah? And I'll go, how about some Lecrae?
Gotta keep her in that Christian culture.
Well, it's not even necessarily that. I just am incredibly uncomfortable at the thought of my less than 2-year-old daughter quoting lyrics about bending over and touching your toes and things like that in reference to sex. So,
yeah, it's interesting because Malachi started picking up catchphrases from Peanuts. Like, I can't stand it. And it's interesting, like, trying to, like we're starting down that path of, like, interacting with culture and like
I thought you were gonna say interacting with human beings and I was gonna be like Josh they're
like,
already
like
humans
now, you know, you don't call people blockheads. But like I it's actually kind of cool, I think, like, because I think part of parenting is like not like censoring everything from your kids, but like teaching them how to like take in some things but not repeat it, and like kind of like trying to teach them the difference between things like that. And I feel like, I don't know, Peanuts shows from the 60s are a fairly, like, safe way to start down that path. So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
that I got to hear Propaganda speak this last weekend. He was at a conference I was at for a ministry training conference.
Nice.
And he had he started talking a little bit about this idea of censorship in media and how we protect or shelter our children. And he had this line that was, it wasn't a line, it was like a whole little spiel, but it was so good, where he basically said that him and his wife have made the decision that rather than keep their children from certain types of content or certain language or words or things like that, they instead want to instill in them a proper grid to actually process that content. And so, like, obviously, like, he's a professional hip-hop artist, you know, and so he listens to a lot of rap, and so he talks about having his 9-year-old daughter in the car when he's listening to rap and having very often to, like, stop and have conversations about lyrics and meaning and, like, purpose and culture and all those different things. And it was actually really cool. It was really cool. It's something I think that's probably insanely uncomfortable for a room of suburban white pastors. But I also think probably a really worthy discussion. Anyway, this is not Please Be Reasonable, the lame parenting podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about the Christian subculture that we grew up in and some of the weird stuff that involves. And so I am insanely stoked about the content we're going to be talking about for the next couple episodes. Do you want to give us a little introduction here, Josh?
Yeah. So today we are going to talk about dating or not dating.
How to kiss it goodbye.
And then say hello to it later or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of kissing and saying hello, and it's really uncomfortable, and you don't call it dating.
But there's like some kind of attraction.
Yeah, and maybe the biggest thing is that you're dating Jesus and true love waits.
And we also have a special guest, again, two special guests in a row.
Two special guests in a row. Our podcast guest budget is blown for the year, everybody. No, not really, because we don't have a budget, but anyway.
And today we have my wife, Emily. Woo!
Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Because she grew up in Christian subculture, too, and specifically homeschool Christian subculture.
Oh, yeah. And if there's any aspect of the world of Christianity that has more experience with awkward non-dating, it's homeschoolers.
Yep.
You can't just respond. That's... Josh, that interaction explains everything about this podcast. Just,
I know. Well, here, let me give a little intro about Joshua Harris.
I'm gonna hand the mic over to Emily so that she can speak into some of this stuff, and I'll interject some thoughts when I have them. Honestly, this is weird. I was gonna say this to you, Josh. I'm so insanely stoked to talk about this because, as a pastor, I've seen the influence of the kind of the Christian courtship dating culture a ton. But I actually, even though I grew up in like really conservative Christian Baptist home, I didn't get, this didn't affect me in a super huge way. Like, I read all of Joshua Harris's books. My parents certainly espoused it. My church did True Love Waits, all those different things. But like all of those things, they weren't given to us as like closed-handed black and white doctrine. It was just like, this is good, you know? And so going back to it now and seeing some of the ways that it was destructive and even spiritually abusive for people was actually really shocking to me at first, because it just wasn't my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually really want to spend as much as I can more time listening in this and trying to learn from it, mm-hmm. rather than just spouting off about my own experience, which would basically just go, I read those books, they're all right, and then I dated some girls, and then I got married.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a very wide variety of experience that came out of this whole kind of thing that we grew up in. And it's really interesting to listen to some of these stories and think about it, and think about like how this, where this movement even kind of came from, and like how it percolated through the subculture.
I do have one question before I hand the mic off, Josh. Did you have a True Love Waits ring?
No, I never did.
Okay, I have two questions then. Did you sign a True Love Waits pledge card?
I don't remember. Possible.
So you're telling me you didn't hand the pledge card to your wife on your wedding day? Josh, I have terrible news for you. In the eyes of Jesus, you're actually not married yet. Any sex you've had up to this point is still considered premarital because you haven't given her the card.
Ooh.
Oh man, this is, I gotta rethink a lot about my life now. Hey, podcast world. I'm here with my wife, Emily.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about dating.
Or not dating.
Or not dating. Yeah. So the other day we were talking about something related to this, and we got on the topic of Joshua Harris and his book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, which a lot of you guys know what we're talking about. And
if you haven't read it, it totally has a guy tipping his fedora on the front, which has a totally different cultural meaning now, which I love. But anyway.
And I think it was my mom, actually, that mentioned, like, didn't he, like, take back his view or recant it or something? And we looked it up, and this was all just really interesting stuff. So a little bit of background info. So Joshua Harris grew up in homeschool culture and started becoming some kind of a speaker, started a magazine, a little bit of influence when he was 21.
Can I say something besides that, actually?
Yeah.
Because Joshua Harris didn't just grow up a homeschooler. He was the son of basically one of the most prominent homeschool advocates in Christian world. I can't remember his dad's name. Greg, maybe?
Mr. Harris.
But, I mean, dude literally traveled around the country advocating the homeschool culture as we know it to churches. So, So Joshua was, like, the poster boy for hyper-conservative, like, kind of escapist mentality homeschooling and, like, alternative education and those things. So, just for context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Joshua Harris wrote this book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye when he was 21 about how he was going to not date girls and waste time on shallow relationships.
Because they're yucky.
And it sold like a million copies, kind of spawned this whole movement that spilled over from homeschool culture into the broader mainstream culture. And it wasn't just this book. There were other books and there were videos and things. They had a lot of influence on people discussing these things. And now, 20 years later, there was an interview with him on NPR last year where he was talking about how he has started hearing from people who had negative experiences from his book and were kind of some really traumatized by it. And he said on that interview how, well, are we going to, do you just want to play some of that?
Yeah, let's play a clip from the interview.
Let's play a clip from this interview.
It's going to play the ad, but I'll cut that out.
Bi has been something of a relationship Bible for a generation of young evangelicals. It urges people to avoid rushing into relationships and gives advice like this. Dating is a distraction. It can help you practice being a good girlfriend or boyfriend, but those aren't the skills you need for marriage. Joshua Harris wrote the book when he was just 21 years old.
I was advocating for friendship. I was saying, you know, you can get to know this person, you can enjoy a deep friendship, but when you get into this, we're in this relationship where we're sharing more and more of our hearts and our bodies. Is that really a good thing if you're not ready for commitment to the other person? So, you know, that was, I think the problem is when I wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye is that I'd not walked through that relationship yet myself. It was very speculative.
Joshua Harris has been reflecting a lot on the impact of his book. He's heard from people who felt his writing taught them to be ashamed of their bodies and to feel guilty for having any sexual desires. The criticism came out recently on Twitter. One woman reached out and said the book was used against her like a weapon. Joshua Harris apologized.
I think I'm finally at a place where I'm really trying to listen to those voices. And I think it's taken time for the consequences of the way that people applied the book and the way the book affected people to play out. And so I'm hearing these different voices saying, here's how your book was used against me, here's how it was forced on me, or here's how I tried to, no one forced it on me, but I tried to apply it and it had this negative consequence in different ways. I'm trying to go back and really evaluate, you know, where did my book contribute to that? Where was it too stringent? And where was that me and what I was writing? And where was that the families and the church cultures and so on? So I feel...
So, yeah, I think that's so interesting. And I think that's really admirable that he's trying to listen now to different voices. He actually has on his website now a page just for feedback to hear people's experiences, how the book affected their relationships. And there's some positive, some really negative. It's really interesting. I never actually read that book, but like the influence was so felt through the culture. I remember, Sam, I don't even know if you remember this. I remember Bible classes in our Christian high school where I think we would watch videos or something. People would talk about the flower petal thing, giving pieces of your heart away. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Like every person you date, you give away a piece of your heart. It's like giving away part of a flower. And if you date too many people, give too much of your heart away, you'll have nothing left for your future spouse.
That's so unfortunate.
And I don't, like, looking back on that, it's like, is that biblical or scientific?
No.
And, like, I mean, I think there's some, like, you know, potential good core of like value in those ideas. But like, I feel like the way it was, the way that I remember it, like being presented, like the whole thing, it kind of like idolized like your first relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, if your first relationship leads to marriage, like you're a success. And if you didn't, well, you're messing up and you're giving away parts of your heart. You're going to have regrets to boohoo for you.
And I think it's important to note too, I mean, obviously, like, you know, the pastor in the room or whatever, but I think you guys would agree with me. Like, we really affirm the idea of honoring God with sexuality and relationships. I think that's incredibly important. I think the scripture teaches that there's a ton of weight to how we steward relationships, both emotionally, spiritually, physically, sexually, all those things. But this view, this very nuanced view that requires some very specific interpretations of scripture. Again, I feel like this goes back to all our discussions, but it was taught to us as the only real view that actually respected what the scripture taught about relationships. And any other view was lesser or unbiblical or whatever, which, if you're a young person who's like, man, I want to honor God with how I do these things. And then they go, sweet, here's the only way you can do that. Well, then of course, like that's going to be super weighty. And you know what I mean? Like you're going to make like tons of crazy and weighty and drastic decisions based on that.
Well, I just find it somewhat hypocritical that the same parents that are saying, oh, your love is a flower and you're going to run out of petals if you date too many people, they have a lot of kids. Some of these families do. And they didn't run out of love. The Duggars even have a saying, love multiplies. So why isn't that true in our dating boy-girl relationships?
Why, you're saying, why can you, like, give part of yourself away in dating relationships, but you can multiply endless love to your children?
Yeah, it's just inconsistent.
Why can't love be something that is not given away and lost forever, kind of a thing?
Exactly.
A limited quality.
My first son didn't get all the love, and there was less to give to my second son. So.
Yeah. And I mean, there are, like, relationships that end can break your heart, have negative effects. But you know, you can also learn from them and have good things come from them. And I think another part of the, kind of the, one of the, another consequence of kind of this whole thing. So like, I feel like a lot of this movement was kind of a reaction to taking dating too casually.
The 60s.
And so it was kind of this pendulum swinging to making dating so serious that it made a lot of people afraid to start relationships because it, like any relationship, it's like, oh, this is marriage.
So I grew up homeschooled and we had this larger homeschool group that we were a part of. And every year there was this really fancy homeschool Christmas ball. And there was English country dancing and hors d'oeuvres and your whole family was there. I'll emphasize, the whole family was there.
Can I just say that all the last sentences you just said were the most homeschool things I've ever heard in my entire life? Well, the only thing I think they could make that more homeschool is if you went into about how everyone made their own dresses for the event.
They did. They did. There was a theme every year and all the girls would make their own dresses according to the theme. It might be Civil War, ball gowns, it might be international.
Oh, you, just made my day.
You called it. So you get an idea of the setting that we're in. But one year, this sweet boy, whoever.
And how old were you at this?
I was probably 15 or 16. Young teenager. This boy danced with me the whole evening. It was very sweet. And then we parted ways. And the next year, he waited for me and danced with me again the whole time, the whole evening. And then at the end of the second year, we danced together. He's like, so could I maybe get your number? Otherwise, it's going to be a whole year till I see you again. And I didn't know what to say because the culture we were in, that was almost, him asking for my number was almost like a marriage proposal. Like, I know it sounds crazy now, but I was just like, I don't know. I've never given a boy a number. You probably shouldn't have it. I should talk to my parents. And I just kind of was confused. I had never had this happen to me before. And the poor guy, he waited a whole year to ask me that. And I didn't know what to say. So he took it as rejection. And, you know, life went on. But I can't help but wonder, like, in looking back, after rereading these books, looking back, I'm like, that could have been a missed opportunity. Who knows? And I am happily married. You know, Josh is wonderful. But
I didn't pay her to say that.
but how, you've got to admit, we're probably taking things a bit too far when two sweet, innocent kids that have been dancing together can't even exchange numbers because of the immense pressure from this culture. And I should clarify, it wasn't my parents that were putting this pressure on me. My parents dated casually. They were pretty laid back growing up. So it wasn't even my parents. It was this whole culture that was influencing my decisions.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I think are interesting about that. Is one, how, like, so that idea of, like, teenagers, we were scared of, like, casual dating because it was, like, the serious, super serious thing. When, like, our grandparents, like, casually dated, like, super casually. Like, even the whole thing about, like, they used to call it going steady when you would, like, actually start going on dates with just one person instead of multiple, like different people, because you weren't like serious with any of them. You were just going on dates with people, getting to know, that was like getting to know people.
Yeah, there was none of that. And none of that.
But I don't want to jump ahead of where we're going.
Okay. And so then this, like, kind of the courtship concept was kind of pushed on our generation by people who hadn't actually done it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it was being pushed on us as the right way to do things. Like going back, kind of like this idea that it was going back to the good old days, even though like the good old days of like our grandparents' generation wasn't quite like that. Then the second thing I think is interesting, like you were saying, it wasn't necessarily parents teaching this to their kids. It was kind of this meme almost, in the original sense of that word, that just kind of spread through the culture through youth groups and Christian schools and different things. And it just became like this thing in our generation. And one thing I thought was really interesting, one of the stories from on Joshua Harris's website that somebody left actually She says, I was homeschooled all the way until college. I first read I Kissed Dating Goodbye about 10 years ago when I was 15. It was all the rage at my church and homeschool groups, and no one questioned it, except, thankfully, my parents. My dad did not believe a guy should ask his permission to date Courtney. He said if a guy wanted to marry me, he better ask my dad first, but otherwise he trusted me to make wise decisions. I was angry with my dad for a long time. When I saw my friends enter courtships, I thought it was a biblical thing and my dad was failing to fulfill his role. And she went into a relationship and wanted her dad to oversee it, but he refused to. He got to know the boyfriend, but said he wasn't going to oversee it in a traditional courtship role because he didn't want her to take the relationship too seriously. In hindsight, she says she's thankful for the wisdom of her father in rejecting that model. And then she goes on about how now she's in a happy marriage and she's seen some of her friends in the courtship model in either some in unhappy abusive relationships or some unmarried because they refuse to even consider dating to get to know someone. And so I think that's just a really fascinating example of someone who was kind of caught in the culture almost even against like her parents' ideas, but how it was like so spread and like how she felt like it was mm-hmm. the only way, the right way to do things.
I think what's really interesting there, and this goes back to kind of what I already said, is that again, it was just kind of this cultural idea in the Christian subculture that this was the biblical model. This was moms and dads playing into their biblical role. This is the way the Bible prescribes it. But it's like there's nothing biblical about courtship and the way we understand it. Like really, that's like an old like that's like a Victorian thing. I mean, the biblical model is straight up patriarchy and women as property and marriages being arranged as like financial deals. You know what I mean? And so it's like that has always sat funny to me that we could never culturally follow the biblical model for dating because the biblical model for dating does not like acknowledge the humanity of the woman involved.
Yeah, well there's not a biblical model for dating in the sense that there's one prescribed for Christians. There's stories in the Bible of Abraham sending Eliezer, is that his name? Whatever his name was, to get a wife for his son Isaac. But we see that as a cultural thing of the day, not something, you know, that's not the way we live now kind of thing.
I also think, it's important to just state this explicitly, kind of the whole crux of most people's complaints about this model. A lot of it centers around, you know, just like patriarchy and like, you know, the controlling parents and those things. But I really think, the theological crux that people are really pushing on and saying this is unhealthy has to do with this idea of emotional fidelity or emotional adultery. Like Harris basically connects the idea of emotional intimacy in dating with Jesus's teaching on adultery, that it doesn't require physical adultery in order for that sin to still be there. And so there's this pressure put on to say, hey, if you just take this too casually and just throw yourself out there and build all these emotional bonds with these other people, well then you're committing pre-adultery, even though you're not mm-hmm. married yet. Anyone
who looks on a woman lustfully has committed adultery in his heart.
But the result of that, the way that works out practically is, I mean, you're essentially telling a whole group, I mean, when you do that, you're essentially taking any kind of daydreaming, crush, fantasizing, whatever, and saying all of those things are adulterous. Now, as someone who's been in vocational student ministry for like a decade at this point, anytime you want to go to a group of middle schoolers and say, hey, just so you know, you can't have crushes. God does not like that. That just isn't going to work, but that's just a recipe for disaster and destruction.
Yeah, and I don't even know, like, because like I said, I never read Harris's book specifically, or some of these other books. I don't know like how specifically some of those things were explicitly taught. Like I know I did find Harris's second book. Emily found it at the library, Boy Meets Girl, where he talks about meeting his wife and like sort of courting, sort of dating her. Like overall, it's kind of nuanced, like not presenting only one way to do things and just kind of giving ideas. And so, like, you know, I don't even know, like, how much some of these kind of takeaways that permeated through our culture were, like, specific to a book or something, or the way that things were generally taught, and it just kind of, like, opened a door to a lot of these views. But, yeah, there were definitely all these things that influenced people that they took away from it as, you know, having any emotional desires is wrong. Start, you know, you want to say something?
This is my code for I want to say something.
Take it.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, really important to note the difference between, I guess, Dating Goodbye and Boy Meets Girl. I went and just really briefly skimmed them both in preparation for this. I read them both in college before Kim and I dated, actually. I know I read them in, like, eighth grade or something like that, too. But what's interesting is, in my experience at least, the second book is largely ignored. Everyone uses I Kissed Dating Goodbye as kind of canon, which Harris himself said from day one, like, hey, this is speculative. Like, I haven't actually done this yet. And then when he actually got married and went back and wrote a book to kind of add some nuance and clarity to his thoughts, by that point, I Kissed Dating Goodbye was so ingrained, and some of those abstract, idealized principles he'd come up with were so ingrained in the culture that people largely, in my experience, I don't know if this is true totally, so this is, again, this is just kind of anecdotal, but they largely ignored the message of Boy Meets Girl, which I think was much more nuanced and probably much more sane in its approach to those things.
So not only did the results of this teaching in our culture make a lot of people afraid to start relationships, but it also made people afraid to get out of bad relationships. Emily, how did that affect you?
Well, as a result of the whole courtship culture that I was a part of people being afraid to talk to one another, I started a serious relationship with the first non-homeschooler to show interest. And we kind of just jumped right in because I wasn't used to somebody actually showing outward interest in me, saying, hey, I will pick you up. We will go get coffee. We will do this, you know. So I liked that he said what he meant, and he meant what he said. There weren't these weird, confusing games that I played in high school because I met him shortly after I graduated. So it was fun. It would have been a good casual date. But the problem with the courtship culture still ingrained in my mind was that I took it way too seriously. I was thinking the whole time, you know, life partner, marriage material. And I think he just wanted to have fun. And so about a year went by of dating, getting closer, and then all these red flags started to appear. And if I had known better, I would have just broke up with him when the red flags started to appear. But courtship culture still in the back of my mind, Joshua Harris still in there somewhere saying, no, you are damaged goods at this point. You have to marry this guy, this first guy you've ever been this close to, because to go back and start over again with somebody else would, you'd just be too damaged at this point. And plus just the fear of the unknown, I guess, because like I said, I never really dated before. I didn't know what to expect, but I was taking it very seriously. So we stayed together, even though there were red flags everywhere in retrospect, showing me that he wasn't the one. And finally, eventually, praise God, he broke up with me. So I feel like God really saved me, because at the time that we broke up, we'd been dating over a year, maybe a year and a half. At the time that we broke up, that he broke up with me and broke my heart, I would have married him. Because I was taught that that's where all good relationships ended up, was marriage. And I was determined to stick with it. I didn't want to be a failure. I was ready to forgive him for his times that he let me down. I thought it was just a matter of being a good Christian and forgiving. I didn't know I had the right to get out. So after healing from the heartbreak of that, I just can't believe how how God saved me from that whole situation, how I actually could have married the wrong person. And then shortly after that, I met Josh. And the good news is it gave me something to compare to. I learned a lot from that relationship.
How shortly?
I think maybe 4 or 5 months. I don't know. Pretty shortly.
I'm sure there's a mean joke in there somewhere, but I don't want to come up with it because you guys are really cute.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly glad things happen that way.
That's right.
But, you know, somebody could look at that and say, well, you weren't doing the real courtship model. And,
we were dating. It's true.
But when, you know, so many people grow up under that general teaching and you have these ideas of, oh, breakups prepare you for divorce and you're giving your heart away and you need to make, you know, the fewer number of relationships you have, the better. All of that, like, makes you afraid to get out of one and, committing, and maybe you shouldn't be committing yet. And there's lots of other stories of people that had the exact same experience.
Yeah, I thought it was just me. It wasn't until recently, when I started researching this whole courtship thing, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really powerful. This exact same thing has happened to other people. The exact same thing. And some of them did get married to the wrong person. And some of them did ignore those red flags when they appeared. So I'm just really grateful that, you know, it all worked out for the best. And even through the heartbreak and through the mistakes, I mean, I made mistakes. It wasn't all on him. I'll be honest. I messed up too. But it was all in all a very valuable experience. And you can't protect your children from heartbreak. I think part of the goal of courtship that parents have is there will be no heartbreak. You will marry the first person that you court because we will hand select them and we'll know that they're perfect and no one will get hurt. But that's just not realistic.
And I think this speaks to, and obviously, like, we're going to have a couple episodes where we dig into some of this stuff with just homeschool culture and those things. But I think this speaks to the larger issue of control that I think is rooted in some of the unhealthy expressions of homeschool culture. I want to say that, like, very careful to say that I think homeschooling can be great, but there are some unhealthy expressions of it. And I think a lot of that unhealth centers around parents seeking too much nuanced control in their children's lives. And I think an extreme expression of the courtship model allows for that. Mm-hmm. It creates space for parents to have more intense control over their kids' lives and to shelter them from certain experiences and those things.
Well, I agree with you, Sam. I think there's definitely healthy expressions of parents coming alongside their children, helping them make good choices. And there's the unhealthy expressions of very overly controlling parents who want to dictate their kids' lives. And I think there's an important distinction to make. We are of the belief that parents can be mentors and can be available to help their children make those wise decisions, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the whole thing where you want to protect your kids from being harmed. I'm sure that a lot of the previous generation had good intentions, the wanting to protect our generation from emotional harm, from sex outside of marriage, and, you know, believing that would be very harmful for us. But then there's the kind of this flip side of if you try too hard to protect someone from harm, they never grow and they never learn things on their own. And, you know, while you can have dating relationships with scars and regrets and too much intimacy and so forth, you can also learn from mistakes, and Jesus can redeem and grow you into maturity. I definitely think there's a balance there. I feel like, I wonder if a lot of this was a reaction to kind of the sexual revolution of the 60s 70s and that whole thing, like, leading people to feel like, as at least a lot of, like, the mainstream Christian culture, like, okay, we didn't really do this model ourselves, but the world's different now, so we have to be more careful. We have to protect our kids more from this world that's out there.
For sure. I read a book where she said exactly that. She's like, yeah, we dated, but the world's different now. We need a new strategy for our kids. And the problem with her writing that book was she'd never done it, and neither had any of her kids at that point. So she was writing about a theory. But yes, it was in response to the sexual revolution and birth control and all that.
And so it's sad the way a lot of it has played out with a lot of people in our generation. Just how it's played out. It makes me think, like, what do we want to teach our kids about these things? What are you going to teach Millie about dating Sam?
Do we want to go there? I've got some strong thoughts on this.
Well, something me and Josh were saying tonight is we don't want to have a complete knee-jerk reaction the other direction. And because it's easy for every generation to say, well, that didn't work. Let's try this other extreme. Well, that didn't work. Let's try this other extreme. So we hesitate to go too far that direction. But yeah, I mean, we're kind of leaning towards a more casual approach to it all. What about you?
So this is perfect, because I think you guys will disagree with this, and so I want you to push back on this a little bit. I've worked with middle school and high school students vocationally for the last decade in a Christian, like, subculture setting. I really do think casual dating is pretty pointless and pretty destructive. I think especially in middle school, and that's part of the piece man, I see casual dating that is modeled after our media. I see that getting younger and younger and younger, to where, you know, like, we have fifth graders, like, coming up into middle school ministry in our church who have already had, like, five or six girlfriends or boyfriends. and you laugh at that and go, what does it mean to have a girlfriend in fifth grade? But I've spent time, like, counseling with kids who are like, yeah, I've gone on dates and our parents picked us up and dropped us off and we hung out at the mall for 4 hours and made out. And it's like, you haven't hit puberty. Like, why do you care about making out? You know, but I really, like, I don't want to just dismiss that, because that is a reality. And the reality is that sexual brokenness is universal. Like, every human being in a broken world experiences a broken sexuality in some way. And we have a culture that really is beating that into our children, whether they're in homeschool or not. Like, even the people who are trying to hide and shelter their kids away from that, I think more often are just fooling themselves about how sheltered their kids are. I just see that over and over and over again. And the place it's led me personally is that I do think casual dating in middle school and high school is at best pointless and at worst really destructive. And I have thoughts on that. Like, I do think there is value in learning relational skills and learning discernment and learning how to pick apart personalities and compatibility and giftedness and calling and same direction, all those different things. I think those are incredibly important skills that young men and women have to learn, that we've missed out on because a lot of the courting culture. But I'm personally of the belief that all of those skills that need to be learned at the middle school, high school age can be learned in appropriate friendship settings. Wesley Hill has a book, Spiritual Friendship. Have you read that one, Josh? Mm-hmm. I strongly suggest it. It's one of the only excellently written and sourced theological works on the theology of friendship I've ever read. But it's really good. But I think we've basically missed out on what biblical, God-honoring friendship is in our culture. I think if we promoted an actual theology of godly committed friendship, I think those things would teach us the skills necessary to have the discernment to step into dating in a way that would actually be beneficial and not pointless or destructive. That's my thought on it. And so I want to hear you guys push back on that. But that's that's the thoughts I've formed from my time in ministry. Whether or not those things will hold true when my daughter comes of age and begins being interested in those things, time is yet to tell. Like I can, I'm talking to you in ideals. I'm talking to you about the way I teach other people's children and the way I teach in a church, not things I've put into practice with my own flesh and blood. So,
mm-hmm. My only pushback with that whole scenario is that's essentially what I did in high school, was everybody's a friend, friends until proven otherwise. But it gets very complicated because when you're that age and you have all these, you know, feelings and emotions, you do have crushes on your friends. And so there starts to be a lot of gossip and there starts to be a lot of confusion of who likes who. And So that was my personal experience with that, with the friendship thing. It's a good theory, though.
And my encouragement with that would be, yeah, you should have crushes on your friends, and you should hang out, and you should talk about your crushes, and you should figure them out. But I think having enough clarity to call it what it is, we're friends, and we've been hanging out, and we have a crush on each other, I think that is much more honest and much more beneficial for a child's development than putting the label and the cultural pressures of a dating relationship onto something that is essentially a teenage crush. Again, I'm speaking in hypotheticals, so I'm, you know, but that's just been my experience of it.
I really don't have too much to disagree with you, actually. So, yeah, it's really hard to, differentiate between middle school, high school, college, especially like as our own views on these things kind of changed as we grew up too.
Yeah.
Like I still feel like, you know, middle school and even somewhat high school dating is more of a waste of time. But then when it gets into college, I feel more stronger disagreement with some of these more courtship models. But it's also like related to how I grew up and change my views too. So
I really wish we'd gotten John and Christina on to talk about this, because they had the most intense experience of courtship of anyone I've ever known. And like in just the passing conversations I've had with them, like they've had a pretty overall positive like review of that. And obviously like some thoughts of areas where it was hard, but for the most part in conversations, they've talked about the benefit that had for them in their relationship and their marriage. And so I wish we had some of their perspective. We probably should try and get it and get them on maybe to like follow up with this and talk about it. But, I just agree with you on that. Like, I feel like dating with just more context to your life and identity and future, like it just makes sense to me in college, but the whole model of courtship makes less sense to me in college when you have adults who are making decisions for their life and their future. Like having parental oversight on that seems less sensical to me. But again, who knows what I'll think in 16 years when my daughter wants a date. So,
but
would you guys have it better? You guys have it better because you guys have boys. So like on the courtship side of it, like you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have those creepy homeschool parents like having their boys craft letters of intent to you. You know, I've got homeschool families at my church, so I might be getting those weird letters, but
and that's all partially in jest. I feel like we should clarify, even like sometimes we like talk somewhat critically of homeschools and Christian schools and stuff, but it's all within a context that's understood to us of overall appreciation, where we are pointing out things that have had negative consequences. But I feel like people from the outside could possibly misinterpret that as like we're trying to be critical about those things in general. So slight disclaimer there.
Yeah, I feel like we actually probably should have said that expressly a long time ago. We mentioned like the name of our high school last episode. I love our high school. I'm glad I went there. I'm not upset that we had that experience. I was homeschooled for a while. I loved that. I grew up in hyper conservative Christian church world with True Love Waits and D-Nows and all the different stupid stuff we did, one way bookstores and all those different things. And I'm I'm legitimately grateful to God and to my family for all of those things. I think the critiques we bring are the critiques of love and the critiques of family, of knowing like, hey, this is kind of, you know, this is kind of who we are. And so we can poke holes in some of the stuff that's ridiculous, but also call people to something better.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all I know is my own experience. I can't exactly critique anything else or comment on anything but what has happened to me in my life.
Yeah. You know, and I think you can say we had good experiences, but we also recognize that a lot of people had really tragic, harmful experiences.
Yeah.
And that that's why we need to talk about some of these things.
Absolutely.
Something else I didn't want to leave out of this discussion was the kind of takeaway from all this on single people and just kind of a theology of singleness. I feel like it's overlooked a lot, which I feel like it's overlooked a lot in the church in general. I know a lot of singles feel like church is all about families and marriage and children, and they kind of get overlooked at best as a like a temporary holding place until you get married. Which is really unfortunate because some of like, you know, the leading figures in our religion were single.
I.e. Jesus.
And sort of Paul, although I guess he was actually married from what seminary students tell me. But his main teaching was all like, hey, don't if you don't get married, it's better.
Maybe he was married and had a terrible marriage, and that's why he taught that.
But like, what? And so, what's interesting to me is I feel like there's a potential in some of this not dating theology to like elevate singleness to like its full potential, and I even get some hints of that in some in these books that I was skimming. Like, oh, you know, don't focus on dating so you can focus on serving the Lord. But I feel like the overall takeaway from it, like the main focus was don't date so you won't ruin your emotional heart for marriage. And while you're not dating, hey, you can serve the Lord more. Like it's kind of the side effect thing. But the overall like picture that was presented to us all was like all about not doing things so you could have a better marriage. And it was all looking forward to your marriage and kind of overlooking the potential of a single life devoted to the Lord.
Yeah, I think what's insane about that is the biblical teaching basically says like singleness is where you start, like that's the ideal that we should aim for is a single life devoted to God. But if God calls you to marriage, like yeah, you should pursue that. And we totally reverse it, and not just reverse it, but to say, no, yeah, God designed you for marriage.
Yeah.
And if you're not married, I guess God calls people to that, but seriously, like there's probably a reason you're not married. You're probably weird. Like that's,
yeah.
It's just so unfortunate to me that we do that in the church. We don't have time to have this discussion really tonight, but that book, Spiritual Friendship by, Wesley Hill. He digs into this in such a beneficial way. He's a guy who identifies as homosexual and has chosen a life of celibacy, like in his interpretation of scripture and how to honor God and those things. And so he talks about how he has a vested interest in rediscovering the biblical, like the mandates for friendship, because a lot of this church culture that teaches the normative, like design of God is for married, happy families basically is teaching him like, well, that's awesome that you're making this sacrifice to love God, but you're going to be incomplete and unfulfilled for the rest of your life. So good job with that. And so he really digs into this idea of what does it look like to have God-honoring friendships that are intimate and deep and committed and where you're able to actually search each other's souls and know each other and like what that looks like. And it really, really, really beautiful book. And I think a conversation that is insanely needed in the church right now, because we are, I think we're doing disservice to multiple generations of people that God has called to singleness for the benefit of the kingdom, who feel pressured and forced into pursuing family life because we've somehow made family life the Christian ideal.
Mm-hmm. I know some amazing single people. It's crazy. So one woman I met in Haiti lives in Haiti, and she's 50, and she's hit menopause, and so she's faced the fact that she is serving, and she cannot have her own family now. But she's living her life for Jesus, serving where she's been called. And to me, that's a really beautiful thing, and I think we should honor that.
Absolutely. Anything else we need to cover on this? We can go on, and we'll probably have more episodes on some specifics, but what do you got, Pastor Sam?
Just for our last thing tonight, I brought these cards for you guys. I want you to take these really quick. These have a pledge to God about saving yourself for marriage. I need you just to pray this in your heart and sign your name at the bottom and date it. You can keep this in your wallet. I also got you guys these rings. You can wear them like they're wedding rings, and you can take them off on your wedding day when you have sex for the first time. That's all I got, because true love waits, man.
Hey, Pastor Sam, thanks for building up my expectation of sex as an unmarried person so that I'll have unrealistic expectations about going into marriage.
I think the main goal of true love waits is not to build up your expectations to unrealistic standards, but just to make you so guilt-ridden and terrified of your natural sexual desires that you lack the ability to enjoy sex in the context of your marriage for several long years.
Oh, snap. Once again, God redeems all things.
Oh, man, I might cut that. I might be too embarrassed to say that on our podcast.
Do we got time for a thing of the week?
Yes, please.
Do you want... I've got a nerdy thing of the week.
Thing of the week.
Let me first say thanks again, Emily, for coming on and talking and sharing your experiences and opinions.
Whatever, Emily. We all know you only got on the podcast because you slept with a co-host.
Oh, snap.
I mean, that's how I got on the podcast, too. But
so, thing of the week. Do you want to go with a funny, nerdy thing or a dark but beautiful, redemptive thing?
Either.
Okay.
Nerdy.
Okay. Nerdy thing.
We need something lighthearted.
Lighthearted. This is funny. If you like Lord of the Rings. Speaking of rings. See that segue there?
Oh, like your true love waits ring. That's like the one ring to rule your sexual desires. And in the darkness, find them.
Oh, man. So I saw this on the internet the other day. 7 reasons why your smartphone is Bilbo's ring. You ready?
Yes.
Number 1, you randomly worry that you don't have it, check your pocket, your heart rate quickens, you check your other pocket, find it, and then slowly calm back down again. Number 2, your phone is powerful and magical. 10 years ago, if you told someone all the things your phone would do, they would have thought of it as magic. Number 3, you sometimes think of getting rid of your phone, but every time you get ready to throw it away, you step back from the edge and change your mind. Number 4, to the observer at a distance, for hours on each day, you look at it, make faces at it, touch it, stroke it, and talk to it. Number 5, your phone, through the course of months and years, slowly changes you into a different version of yourself. Number 6, your phone gives you the impression you have great power and are in control, but it actually ultimately gives much more power to the great I, i.e. Apple, Google, Microsoft, Samsung, who, as everyone knows, is storing and cataloging and quantifying every move we make.
Oh, but not Windows, because no one has Windows phones.
And number 7, when you use your phone, you disappear to all those around you and are instantly transported to something that is like reality, but is a warped and clouded version of it.
See, I only have one issue with this, and this actually is probably the one area where my nerdery falls off. I don't know much LOTR facts, as the Tolkien nerds call them. But isn't there a scene in the book / movie, first one, when they're all like when they're at Elftown? Isn't that the name of the city, Elftown? They're at Elftown discussing their plans, and doesn't the guy hit the ring with a hammer? And it breaks his hammer.
Yes.
In Elftown. Isn't that a thing?
Yes.
So the ring can only be destroyed by throwing it into Volcano Land, where the eyeball lives.
But I have an iPhone, and sometimes I breathe funny and the screen shatters. So that's, I think, where this analogy breaks down.
Well, you know, it's metaphorical, Sam, about how the ring calls to us and changes us and ensnares us, just like smartphones.
Here's what I'm saying, though. If I could get an iPhone that it was as indestructible as the ring, I wouldn't care that it's sucking out my soul slowly and turning me into Gollum. I'd be super cool with it.
I think that's the point.
So really quick, before we end out, I feel like we kind of meandered here a little bit and maybe didn't have as much structure as we meant to, but we want to take you guys on kind of a mental progression for us. This was a really cool thing. So we started this discussion talking about just this idea of courtship in the conservative Christian subculture and how that worked out in homeschool world and those things and our own experiences. We started there, but as we were researching this took us to some really cool places and asking some really cool questions specifically about dating culture and love and relationships in the Christian context, but also about homeschool culture. And then that even took us down a road to talking about just patriarchy in Christianity and the understanding of the roles and authority of men and women. And so we kind of want to take you guys on that journey with us over several episodes. And I think it will be really, really cool. I think it'll be beneficial to kind of walk through this progression and dig through some of this stuff. So this is the first part of this conversation, but we're going to continue this on over the course of a couple episodes. So, yeah.
And don't worry, Andy, we are still going to do, I want to do one on, morality. Without God.
Oh man, that'd be so good.
And maybe even one on like contradictions in the Gospels. I've been looking into some of that stuff like with what I think is an open mind, more open mind than like I would have had.
Yeah.
But like some of it, I'm honestly not that impressed by some of the alleged contradictions. I'd love to kind of dialogue some of that with you.
Oh yeah, man! I have some resources for you. But
of it is really interesting. I'll say that.
Judas and Thutis, man. That's my little teaser there.
Anyway, so we got some ideas. Thanks everybody for checking it out.
As always, we really invite you guys' comments, thoughts, participation. Reach out to us on Twitter or Facebook. There's a PBR page for both those things, or just reach out to me and Josh. We're both on Twitter and Facebook and those things. And you can always email us, pbrcast@gmail.com. We welcome your thoughts and comments. And, yeah.
As always, thanks, Kingly, for some music.
Kingly, if you're listening to this, Kingly, and I know you're not, but if you are, thank you. Thank you for letting us use your awesome music on our crappy podcast. We so desperately need it.
Well, I guess that about does it.
All right, man. I guess I'm going to go read Mark Driscoll's marriage book because I'm a heretic.
I guess I'm going to go read all of Joshua Harris's books because I'm a good nuanced Christian.
Kiss this podcast goodbye.